and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight. Thanks for taking the time to listen. Tonight I have with us Cassidy Bishop, who has an amazing story that I want you to hear. You know, usually I have scientists who do research on topics or treat people who have mood disorders and addictions, but Cassidy is actually a person who's experienced it and who's came through the tunnel to the end of the other side. And I just wanted to share her story. So, Cassidy, thanks for taking the time to come on my show. And please, if you don't mind, tell my listeners a lot about you, you know, what you did, your background, how you came to find out that you had a mood disorder, and what you did about it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Eva. When I was 16 years old, my life suddenly took a turn into a horrible nightmare. Prior to that, I was a 7-time All-American basketball player. I was kind of the high school sweetheart in my town in Littleton, Colorado. I was also the place kicker for the boys' varsity football team for my high school. Excellent student, very social. About a week prior to my 16th birthday, I contracted chickenpox. Had never had it before, and it was a very severe case. I remember my doctor telling my mom that every single pox that she saw on the outside, I had probably at least 3 internally. And it was very, very painful, and it took about 2.5 weeks to get through. Shortly thereafter, my world completely turned upside down. I had attempted suicide 3 times. My birthday's in April. By August, I had attempted suicide 3 times. Ran away from home, turned away from family and friends. Every single thing that I had known and had given me comfort and some type of grounding, I completely walked away from. And it was a shock to my family and I. And personally, I remember looking back, knowing something was wrong, but not understanding what was happening to me. I then saw a doctor, and I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I was immediately placed on medication.
Wait, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What, you know, everything is labels nowadays. What is bipolar? I mean, what do you mean when you use that label, bipolar? What happened? What'd you do for somebody to say that's what you had?
Sure. And let me also say, initially the diagnosis was depression. The doctor saw me is crying all the time and suicidal. They put me on antidepressants, which after being on them about 2 months, I suddenly spiraled into a mania. And what I mean by that is extreme racing thoughts. I could not concentrate. I would spend days awake, not sleeping, becoming very obsessive compulsive, washing clothes 3 and 4 times before I felt that they were clean, exercising, even while I was extremely ill, for hours at a time. Well, what happens is then you go back to the doctor, and the doctor says, I see, you're experiencing these manias, you're bipolar. Bipolar meaning that you experience random cycles going from extreme lows of depression up to extreme highs of manic activity. Now, it's my understanding that there are multiple diagnoses now of bipolar, and it really depends on how a person cycles, meaning going from either a depression to a mania and back down to a depression. A rapid cycler, which is what I was diagnosed as, is someone that technically cycles 4 times, I believe, within a calendar year. And Eva, I will tell you, at my worst, I was probably cycling from a depression to a mania and back down at least 20 times a day. And this would go on for months at a time. It's extremely exhausting. It's painful physically. It's painful mentally, emotionally.
So did you, just to describe it to people, you don't necessarily mean that you were just depressed. You mean that you were hopeless. And
absolutely.
Had no worth and no value and no need for you to be here in the world. It's more
absolutely.
Than
depression. It's a complete sense of worthlessness, as you said. I've often told people that what happens is when you get into that state, now it becomes a fine line of, are you really worthless, or is it just how you perceive yourself? And your mind kind of goes into this world of uncertainty. You don't know what's real, what isn't. Am I really feeling this badly about myself for a valid reason? Is it all in my head? So not only does it become a battle that you are trying to fight with doctors and your family to try and get better, it's also a battle within yourself and within your mind. And it can be devastating. And it was for me for many years.
So I have another question, too. Did you have psychosis that went along with that? I mean, you know, sometimes when people get in states like that, they become a victim to themselves. And it's all everybody else's fault. Did that happen to you? You know, whatever happens, you know, if you have a bad day or if the dinner burns or whatever it is, it's somebody else's fault. Did you
absolutely.
Have that experience, too?
I did, Eva. A lot of blaming. My mind would play tricks on me, and suddenly everyone was out to get me. It wasn't my fault. It was everyone else around me, be it my parents, who I virtually grew up as an only child in my family and had an extreme bond with. I immediately put the walls up, and I was on the defense and felt attacked by them. And as my illness progressed, where it was not being stabilized and it got worse, not only did I feel a threat of actual people and their attack, but I started to hallucinate. I started to have schizophrenic tendencies.
Did you see or hear things, or both?
Both.
So let me... did you ever have any, and I don't know how to describe this, did you ever have anything about you that changed? Any facial, like I know a person that has a mood disorder, and I don't know what the mood disorder is, but I know that when it's coming on, you can be sitting there having a cup of tea and everything can be great. Nothing's wrong. But then suddenly, you know, that little indentation under the nose, right above the lip, that will
yes.
become very pronounced. When that happens, I know that this person is going to have a cycling of the mood disorder, whatever it is. Because, you know, labels, how do you know it's, you know, bipolar, what is that thing? But whatever you want to call it, the feeling bad and the depression or the rage or whatever it is. Did you rage?
I did rage. I had bouts of extreme anger. And oftentimes, more often than not, I guess I should say, the rage was maybe only 2 times out of 10 was it ever at someone else. What I found in my experience was that my rage, I would turn it inwardly and onto myself.
How does that work? Well, before we go on, did you have any characteristics about you that changed? Like I was at the end of that thing. Did you ever notice?
According to everyone else, I have to say, I mean, everything changed. But one of the things that I was told when an episode of what I would call an episode of going either into a mania or into a depression, when I started to go into one, people would look into my eyes and they said it would just, you couldn't see, there was no soul. it was just blank.
I understand that.
And which obviously has to be quite frightening for the people that, you know, are witnessing and looking at someone that they care about and watching them change that way.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you raged internally, did you verbalize this to the rest of the world and the rest of the world think that you were really raging at them, or was it all silent on the inside?
I would say primarily it was all silent on the inside, and the way that I expressed my pain, my rage regarding what was going on was in a way of hurting myself. And it wasn't so much a suicide attempt. It was more of, I was a cutter. I was somebody that would intentionally cut themselves to, in essence, ease the pain that I was feeling. But it, on the same time, I was also punishing myself.
Well, I didn't know that about you. I knew you had the mood disorder. My daughter had turned into a cutter one time, and, oh, man. How did you, she's doing so much better, but how did you stop that? I mean, she stopped and she hasn't had it, but not too long ago, about a month ago, I found a razor and I went, what are you doing with this? And she said, I was thinking about it.
It's difficult. It's difficult to walk away from, because the way that I've explained it to people that I've spoken to, they've asked me, doesn't it hurt? Well, it does on the onset. And then you come to a point where the pain numbs and you get only a sensation of pressure. And it's that pressure that seems to be releasing from internally, from inside. And it helps, as bizarre as that may sound. And it's hard, because I think so many people that go through it, again, they don't understand why they're feeling the way that they're feeling. Oftentimes, yes, they have a support network of family around them, but when they walk into, you know, to a classroom or in a grocery store on the street, into a restaurant, and if anybody were to see those marks on them, or, you know, anybody can sense that negativity, that darkness kind of emitting from our pores. That's the way that we feel when we're going through something like that. And we can't explain it to other people, and there's such a stigma oftentimes that we feel like we need to punish ourselves. And that's the only way that we can get a release from the pain is to hurt ourselves. And it takes a long time to
what
get away
were you
from.
Yourself for?
I'm sorry?
What did you think you were punishing yourself for?
Well, in my case, I was this superb athlete. My sophomore year in high school, I was considered one of the top five players in the country at my position. I got my first recruiting letter when I was in fourth grade to play college basketball.
Wow.
I was really showcased. And then, you know, to be a football player on the boys, you know, football team, and, you know, I was an all-conference place picker. And I was just epitomizes this perfect high school sweetheart. And when I got sick, people didn't understand. They were angry at me for getting sick. I had let down my community. I had let down my school. I had obviously let down my family. It was devastating. And I couldn't get back on track. And as everything fell apart, the only person obviously I could blame was myself. Truly, that's what everyone else was telling me, you know, and so I had to punish myself.
For my listeners who have never experienced this or who may be wondering about this, Were you able, because I know my daughter was able to hide this from me. She would wash the towels or do whatever, and I would never see it. Were you able to hide it from your family?
Yes, for
what
a while.
Symptoms that people, parents could look, or loved ones could look for? Because you do it under your clothes, so it's not people, she did. You know, eventually it got to where there were no more places under her clothes, but I found out by then. But for someone who's, you know, when they first start, what are some signs that a parent can look for?
I mean, obviously, simple things like wearing long sleeves, if they're going to be cutting on their arms. They're wearing long sleeves, and it's a nice day out. Wearing same thing with the pants, wearing long pants when they probably would normally wear shorts or a skirt, you know, if it's a girl. Sitting down, oftentimes when you cut yourself, the clothing hurts. So have they all of a sudden gone from tighter wearing clothing to extremely baggy? And it only happens every once in a while. It sounds simple, you know, but those are truly some of the little characteristics to watch for. But I would say...
Never thought about that. Clothes, anyway.
Right, you know, it would, because when you cut, obviously it scabs. And the clothes will often catch on the scab. And I think primarily mine was all on my arms and maybe the top of my legs. So again, mm-hmm. those are areas that when clothing rubs on it, it's extremely painful. And again, it's not something that a parent may say, oh, well, she wore sweatpants or, you know, this was odd for a couple hours. Obviously, it takes time for these to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So this is days at a time that something, this type of behavior would occur.
Okay, so did you do any type of testing as for, like, neurotransmitter testing or nutritional testing so that you knew what was going on? How did you find out which thing nutritionally, because we know that you're better today. I can tell my audience that. I'm not going to spoil everything for them. But how did you know?
Spoil the ending.
Yeah. How did you know which nutritional element to look for?
I had bounced around in and out of school, and this would be junior college, after being diagnosed. For years, and I wound up in California and started seeing a psychiatrist, he's actually a psychiatrist, out in Ojai, California. And at the time, I was placed on Wellbutrin and lithium. Lithium, by the way, so that some of your listeners may get an idea as far as when people say side effects with some of these meds, lithium is horrible. And oftentimes, it's kind of a doctor's last resort. I had tremors to the point that I could not hold a pen. My hair fell out in clumps. I was having kidney and liver function tests done twice a month through blood draws because the amount that they had placed me on was so high that at any point, they felt that my kidneys could shut down. I started seeing this doctor, and he had done an enormous amount of research and read a bunch of studies on how nutrition could help stabilize me. And I think told my parents even as quickly as a year if it was done very strict. And he had a doctor out there that he wanted me to see to do testing, nutritional testing. As I recall, the wait list for that was 18 months and extremely expensive.
Now, what testing was this? Because this, when was this? 2000? When was this? When did this happen?
This would have been in 1998.
Okay. Because I want people to know that it was very expensive back then, but things have radically changed. Things are much less expensive. I know because I've just been through it with my own daughter, and it, you know, it's something that the average person can do.
Right.
My card that you can make it happen. So go ahead. If you could tell us about that testing, what it was, and just so,
yes.
how, so they know how to follow you.
They were going to do a significant amount of blood panel work. They were going to do hair and skin tests, anything for allergies. They were also going to look at anything as far as thyroid and the hormonal level and all of that. And you're right, Eva. When I was diagnosed, when I was going through this, there's so much now available to families and people that are suffering now that wasn't back then. In fact, this test that I'm speaking of that they wanted me to do was about $18,000.
Wow. What was it?
Where? It was out in California.
What was it?
It was the blood panel work and all of this genetic and the hair follicle and the skin testing and the scrapes. And it
wow.
was very expensive, but at the same time, hugely expensive. My parents didn't have that, and I couldn't physically afford to wait 18 months. It was a situation where if I did not get some help right away, more than likely, I was going to wind up dead. So I started working with this doctor, again, in California, and went back to him, and he said, okay, well, let's start making some adjustments. And I remained on the Wellbutrin and the lithium, but I started cutting out various things in my diet. I started cutting out, for instance, all milk and milk products. I started cutting back on all gluten, and it did start to make a huge difference, but I was still on the medication. I ended up going back to Colorado from California and continued to work with the doctor in California, but I also found another doctor in Colorado Springs that actually was the psychiatrist for the Olympic Training Center. So he was familiar with athletes. He was familiar with the fact that I had a high metabolism, that I had low body fat because I was working out and getting back in shape to play basketball. And he started to discuss with my family and I the benefits of using certain vitamins and or certain minerals, actually, to replace the lithium. And when he talked about it, he's described looking at a periodic table, and if you look at lithium and all the various minerals that are within the same line, and we started discussing magnesium and copper and zinc and calcium, and he also referred to some research about how nutrition can help stabilize people with central nervous system disorders, like bipolar. So in 1999, I started on huge amounts of over-the-counter vitamins and minerals, and it really did make a difference. However, I was still on the medication, so I was starting to stabilize, but, you know, looking back on it now, the benefits that I was getting from the nutrition were being counterbalanced by the pharmaceutical meds in my system. So after
how long did it take from the time that you started the nutrition or the, I don't know how it worked, the your change until you saw some result?
I was seeing results with, as I said, with taking just over-the-counter minerals and vitamins, but I was also taking it with the Wellbutrin and the lithium. At the same time, my mother was also diagnosed with bipolar, ironically, after I was, and she was at the time 55, maybe, so very late in her life. My dad was just beside himself. I mean, here, the two most important women, you know, in his household were suffering tremendously, and he wanted desperately to find a solution. And he worked with some people that were doing a case study on the treatment of central nervous system disorders. And I started on that regimen, which I am currently on now and have been. I started in that in 1999. And when I first started it, I noticed a difference within 30 days of coming off of the medication and going on to the nutritional supplements. And since then, it's just continued to get better.
So you went use several different product lines, didn't you? And I don't want to bash anybody here, so I just want to kind of say yes or no.
Yes.
You went through several supplement lines, right?
Yes, I've been on two brands. I've been on one brand. I was on one brand for approximately 3 years, and then from that point forward, I've been on the second brand, and I've been stabilized for 13. The changes that I experienced.
Yeah, what made change the brand?
There were some added benefits to the second brand that I went with. There were some additional amino acids, as well as the fact that the second brand, the body will absorb plant-based minerals, for instance, because the molecule is smaller and it's more easily digested, more quickly digested in the small intestine. And the second brand really had, in my opinion, had more of a superior product, and I felt better, even better, on the second one. So that's why I've stuck with that one for 10 years.
And what is this product that seems to be working so well for you? I'm just curious.
The product is called Quiet Minds, as in a quiet mind. And like I said, I've been on that for 10 years.
And did you? I'm just kind of thinking through. I can't find my question. I can't get my words out here. How long before you stopped cutting when you did this? Once you started doing it, how long did it take?
It took about. I would have to say maybe 3 months.
Really? And how did it go away? What happened? My daughter said to me, "Mom, one day, the blackness went away." So does that make any sense to you?
Yes, Eva, it does. In fact, I will tell you, one of the things that I've repeatedly told audiences that I've spoken to, it was as if when I was on the medication, when I was sick and not stable, it's like looking through a stained glass window. You can still see outside, but everything's kind of distorted. And it's blurry. When I went on to the nutritional supplements, it was like crystal clear. My vision was brighter. In fact, I'll give you an example, Eva. After going on to the nutritional supplements, probably the first 6 months, my eyes were light sensitive.
Really?
The sunshine was so bright, yes. And it gave me a headache. But again, it was like somebody had lifted a shroud from off of my face, and I was finally able to see clearly. So like your daughter said, the darkness was gone. Things seemed brighter, more detailed, more defined.
Now, do you sell these yourself, or do you just use them?
I just use them.
I'm looking at them right now, and I see they use phenylalanine. So I was wondering, which form of phenylalanine did they use? Because I know that helps you feel good, but DLLD. Do you know?
I don't. And what I've always told people is, I always like to tell my story. I like to have people hear me and what I've been through and know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. All I know is that what I've been on has worked, and I know that there's research that has backed it. As far as the details, I can't honestly say.
I'm just a detail person, and when I get in there seeing that, I love supplement. I mean, I love studying supplements, so that's why I asked. So you don't have to worry about going into that at all.
Okay.
Don't even worry. Tell us where you are today.
Well, where I'm at today, and if I may, Eva, I'll go back and I'll tell your listeners what happened after I had become stabilized. I finally got the opportunity to play basketball. I got back in shape. I started attending my classes and getting good positive feedback from my instructors and passing my courses. However, I ran into my next hurdle in life, and that was I needed to regain eligibility to play at the collegiate level. And therefore, it took an appeal to the NCAA, the National Athletic Association. And my appeal was based on the fact that I was asking for eligibility to be given back to me based on a mental illness. Now, the NCAA repeatedly would give eligibility back to athletes who had suffered a physical injury. They tear the ligaments in their knee, you know, they have a concussion, what have you. But never had anyone approached the NCAA to regain eligibility for mental illness. So it was unprecedented. I was very fortunate to be picked up by the University of Louisville, who walked with me in this process and appealed, not only for me, but for other athletes down the line that may be suffering or facing the same situation. And after a very long period of waiting, I was blessed and fortunate, and they granted me my appeal, and I received 3 years of eligibility. And it was remarkable because my story broke and many people picked up on it as far as AP coverage, ESPN did. And it finally allowed me an opportunity to step forward and be a spokesperson for people who suffer. And that's what I've done. I received my bachelor's degree in political science pre-law. I did a year of grad school at the University of Louisville, and I ended up moving back home. Came here and did some work for a couple years and ended up getting married, and I now have a beautiful three-and-a-half-year-old, baby girl. And I'm currently in the process, I am going to be going to law school in the fall. And my main focus is to help represent people that are covered under the Americans with Disability Act. Anyone that suffers from any type of mental disorder, depression, bipolar, they are covered under the ADA. And that's great. However, there are so many people out there that are still experiencing stigma and discrimination. And while we've come a long way in our society to understanding people struggles with mental illness, we have a long way to go. And
so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so that's where I'm headed, is I'm here to move forward, and I believe my journey and the universe is taking me in a direction that I'm taking it to the next level and trying to help others.
So that's what you plan on doing in law school? I mean,
when you get
your law license, is educational law for the ADA?
Absolutely.
Good job. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
One of the things that I see, because I have a child still in school. He's 12 years old. And one of the things that I see in school is that many children are diagnosed with behavior problems. When really it's some type of learning disability or mood disorder. And because people can't see it, that child suffers. So I'm so glad to hear that you're doing that.
Yes.
So there's another event in your life that, if anything, could have triggered you to go back into an episode, this would have been it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Which one are you talking about, Eva?
Your marriage.
Yes. Unfortunately, I got married.
I don't want to know the details of it. What I'm trying to get across to my listeners is that you did well for a long time. Things were going great, and then all of a sudden, a terrible thing happened, and you didn't fall down. Or if you did fall down, your nose didn't hit the pavement. You just stumbled a bit.
I may have scraped my knee, or a shin here and there. I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I think I found, and I think other people that have been on this treatment have found, is when you become stabilized, and the more stability that you gain as you go every single year, when you have a setback, you kind of go, oops, should I be sad? Should I be angry? If I am sad, does that mean, is someone going to think I'm going to have an episode? When in all reality, you're experiencing, quote unquote, normal emotions. I had a devastating divorce, and it completely, once again, turned my life upside down. And it was different this time, because not only did I have me to look out for, I also had my daughter. And I've talked to a lot of people that have known me since I was very young, when I first got sick, when I was 16. And, you know, they've told me, they've said, you know, if this had happened 15 years ago, I think you'd be dead. And I said, absolutely. But this time around, I took my hits, and as I just said, I got knocked down to my knees a couple times and stood right back up and kept walking. And it's a great feeling to know that I can. It's a great feeling to look back and recognize that 15 years ago I wouldn't have been able to. And it just strengthens me even more and makes me more confident. Doesn't mean that I don't have bad days. We all do. Life throws some incredible whirlwinds at us, and it really depends on how we are as a person inside, and the energy that you pull from the people around you and the universe, and continue to move forward. And that's what I've done.
So, and I don't know if you'll know the answer to this question, but if someone had a small child that had this disorder, you know, one that couldn't verbalize it, what would they look for? Do you know this or not?
I'm not a doctor, but I can say that from personal experience, based on how I acted, rage, not concentrating. Now, I'm going to say this, Eva, and it's going to go, but anytime, I think a lot of children out there currently in society, they will go to a doctor, their parents will go to the doctor and say, my child is this, she's rageful, she can't concentrate, she bursts into tears, and again, as you've pointed out, she may be diagnosed with ADD, she may be diagnosed with other various things that really are not getting down to the nitty-gritty of what the issue is. And I would warn parents to be very cautious about allowing a diagnosis or a label to be placed so quickly on a child, particularly knowing now how medicines and other drugs used to treat some of those disorders affect the body. I can't imagine being a small child. In fact, I'll give you an example. I have spoken to a family about 5 or 6 years ago, and they had read my story, and they contacted me and was asking if I had any advice or suggestions for them. And they told me that they had just taken their child to the doctor, and the doctor diagnosed the child as bipolar. And I said, I'm so sorry. I said, How old is your child? And she said, 26 months old.
Oh, wow. That's frightening.
Absolutely. And I said, the doctor diagnosed your child as bipolar? And they said, yes. And I said, well, what's his solution? And they told me that they wanted to put the child on medication. And at that point, you know, it really, that's, again, one of the reasons why I'm trying to speak out and also legally, with my law degree, help people. Because as a child who's 26 months old, the child can't verbalize, look, I'm really depressed, Mom. I think I need some help, or I feel hopeless, or I just can't concentrate, and I'm, you know, I feel just energetic and, you know, what would be considered maybe a mania. They can't do that, and yet the children in society nowadays are getting these labels placed on them and being put on very extreme treatment practices, and it can be very damaging.
Go ahead.
I think that, you know, the biggest thing is for parents to be involved with their children, because if a parent is involved with their child and they are keenly aware of a child's emotions from day to day, any type of change that lasts over a long period of time, I mean, that's at that point they really need to start looking to see if there's something, you know, more wrong, they need to dig a little deeper.
Well, I would also like to add a disclaimer here. Neither one of us are doctors. We're not trying to treat or diagnose you. We are just providing you with information for that purpose, information. But I'd also like to say I personally have had experiences with Wellbutrin and Effexor, and it made me suicidal. So one of the things that I learned, and the very reason that I do this radio show, is because in our generation, after the Vietnam War, people started having more money and materialism, and grocery stores popped up with different kinds of foods where you walk down the middle of the aisles and you think success is being able to not have to work on your meals. So you buy fast food and you buy TV dinners. And these things do not provide you with nutrition. And another thing, I live in a farming community, and I can't tell you how many people that I see with addictions and throat cancers, because even though there are these beautiful acres and acres and acres of vegetables growing, they're covered in poisons. And nobody stops to think about what this does to the fetuses that we're carrying, you know, when we're pregnant. And when we do these things, I've learned recently about a genetic test because I have heart disease. I just had a massive heart attack in the last couple of months. Our diet, things that we get exposed to, switches, flips a switch. So there's, like Cassie was talking about earlier, there are tests available that you can do, but the main thing is you are what you put in your mouth. I just can't stress that enough, and I just had to say that, Cassie. I'm sorry. You've got 15 minutes to talk about anything you want to talk about that we've not talked about that you think is important.
You know, Eva, I think you make a good point as far as the fetuses, and again, you're absolutely right. And I will say again, I am not a doctor. I can only, you know, tell you about my experiences. One thing that really concerned me when I was diagnosed and as I got older was what happens if I do have a child. How in the world, if I'm having these side effects, if this is how I'm feeling, how is this going to affect my unborn baby? And that was one of the things that I was very impressed with and so grateful. I took the Quiet Mind supplements the entire time that I was pregnant, and it passed directly, obviously, to my child. I'll give you an example. My child weighed 7 pounds, 5 ounces, very, very healthy. They kept measuring me before I had delivered, and it seemed that she was measuring very big, and they were concerned that she was going to be over 10 pounds, and I had virtually ultrasounds every maybe 4 days up to the day that I delivered. And turns out I gave birth to her, and the placenta was so huge, It weighed almost 15 pounds.
Really?
And one of the things that the doctor, my doctor had said was the only thing she could think of was it was the high level of nutrients that I had taken in. Because she said I could have easily carried triplets.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens as your child grows older, knowing that she has a history, you know, you and your mom, a genetic history, probably, since you did those things. I'm just so proud of you for doing that. I pat you on the back.
Well,
I really
thank you very much, Eva. Thank you very much.
I really do. I'm so proud that you've come this way. And I hope sometime that you might let my daughter call you and just have a brief chat, and because she doesn't know anybody else like herself.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, your daughter, I would love to speak with her. And I will speak to anyone. You know, again, when I was diagnosed in 94, 95, there was no one out there saying, listen, I know what you're going through. I've been there. You're going to be okay. There was no one. And
well, you weren't
going to
be okay the way you were going. You know, you weren't going to be okay.
Right.
I found my daughter dead in her bed, so I know she. And I don't mind sharing this. Christina Vasilik, who I believe you know, and Julia Ross, and who else is in this group? I can't even think, and I'm on the board with them. Anyway, there is a group of people now where you can go to get support. It's called the Alliance for Addiction Solutions, because even cutting is an addiction, and the drugs they put you on to help you, you get addicted to. But also we teach people how to treat mood disorders holistically. And it's the Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org. It's very cheap to join. I think students can join for like $50 a month. And you have, it's healthcare professionals from all over the world. And we have a monthly teleconference where you can pick, we give a get somebody to give a lecture, and you can pick their brains. And there is a place where you can go for help for free, except for the $50 registration fee. And it lasts for a year. So
they're a marvelous group. They're a marvelous
group. They really are.
And that's what that's all about, is opening the doors for people, knowing that there are people out there that they can speak to, that you're not alone in this situation. And I truly believe, I found the way to stabilization through the natural treatment. That may not be for everybody. I can only say that it's worked for me. Whatever someone chooses as far as their treatment is up to them. I just will work every single day of my life to make sure that I am somewhat of an outlet for anybody in need. And even if it's just speaking to them or an email or someone reading my story, to give people hope. Because
I have one thing to say about that, about choices. I have yet to find a single person on the face of this earth, not that I would know everybody, but a single person that has a shortage of Effexor. You know, God didn't put us here with Effexor. Which brings me another question. Did you have to work on your gut flora?
I did. In fact, and even now, to give you an example, any time that I take an antibiotic, I try to get the antibiotic injected. I have a doctor that is very good about doing that, but anything that will bypass the small intestine, because the minute that an antibiotic goes in, that's fantastic. It's, you know, going to kill all these, you know, viruses or, you know, what have you, but it also does huge amount of damage within the body. And so I use very, very high levels of probiotic.
Which brand do you use?
I've tried a bunch of them, and the best one personally that I found and that I use on a regular basis, I even give it to my daughter, is called Inner Eco, and it's INNER-ECO. And it is it's a coconut water base. So it has no lactose in it. It's gluten-free. It's vegan. and it comes in, I think, two different flavors. But it's fantastic. It's a liquid form, and it has cleared up the issues within my gut tremendously.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear that. So you just taught me something. If you get it injected, it bypasses the gut. Is that what
yes.
you understand? And I know we're both
yes.
not doctors.
Right. That's what I've been told. In order to make sure, for instance, the nutrients is properly absorbed from the quiet minds that I take, if I get an injectable antibiotic, it will still be in my system, but it bypasses the small intestine so that I continue to have those nutrients absorbed. When I ingest one, I'm told that it will kill off the good bacteria, it will kill off the probiotic, and it also hinders the absorption rate of the minerals. So that's why I use injectable forms of antibiotic any time, in any possible time I can.
Okay. So we've got just maybe about 5 or 6 minutes. Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't already talked about or anything you want to reemphasize?
You know, Eva, again, I just think that it's important for people to know that there are vast amounts of information out there to help anyone who is suffering from this. If you have a friend or a family member, the rates of mental illness across the country are staggering. I just recently read an article a few weeks ago that showed that the rate of suicide has increased 4 times since 2008. That's staggering.
Not even to mention the vets that are coming back from this very long war.
Yes. There's got to be a place and an understanding with people that you're not alone. It doesn't have to be that way. And if anybody is listening to this, and again, you know someone that's suffering or you suspect someone is suffering, the best thing you can do is listen. But there is help out there, and there's various kinds. But look for your options and choose the best one for you. And as I said, for me, it was, and I went for years, as I said, I was on 13 different medications over the course of trying to get stabilized. And I found what worked for me. And like you said, putting healthy things in your body, I'm a true believer that if you want life in your body, you need to put living things into it. Good diet, exercise, stay spiritual, and be connected to everything around you.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Cassidy, for it was very synchronistic the way you just called me yesterday out of the blue. It's been so long.
It has.
But I'm grateful. I can't tell you, as a parent who has had to suffer this, if I'd have had somebody like you to listen to, have you written a book?
I'm actually in the process now of writing a book. I have been in a number of books, one by, her name is Gracelyn Guile. My story is in that. My story, as I said, has been on ESPN and in numerous publications across the country over the years. And I'm in the process of writing a book now. But my story, my full story is listed on, Quiet Minds uses my story on their website. So they, you know, anyone that actually wants to read it, they can certainly go on that. And then probably look for my book here. We're hoping to have it finished up by August of 2013.
So if anybody would like to contact you, is that okay?
Absolutely. If I may, I will be more than happy to give my email address. The address is Casper with a K, Casper 4242@gmail.com.
And your website for your supplements that you say work so well, could you tell them where to find those?
Absolutely. It is www. quiet minds, that's plural, all one word, .net.
All right. Anything else you think that we ought to know about?
I think if I just know that there are answers out there, and you may have to search under hidden rocks and in an unorthodox way, but usually that's the best way, in my opinion, that you know you can find peace, and it's not the mainstream. But keep your heart open and your mind open, and good things can happen.
Well, I would just like to say thanks to people like Cassidy. This is my personal opinion. You don't have to go look under rocks anymore, and you don't have to necessarily go to... Though AA is a fabulous tool, and I'm not bashing it, but Abram Hoffer was a personal friend of mine, and I know that AA was not grown the way that it was intended to grow. You no longer have to go to AA and, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm addicted to this, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. And you don't have to do that. You reach out to people like the Alliance for Addiction Solutions, people who can give you tests so that you know exactly what's wrong with you or which genes expressing and which nutritional diet that you should go so that you can sometimes get relief overnight. Like this, I know about this wonderful GABA product called Gabitrol for people who suffer anxiety. This woman told me, she said, Eva, in 15 minutes I was a different person. So there are things to help you. You don't have to hide anymore, and you don't have to be ashamed, and you don't have to be ashamed to tell your doctor that you rage, because it's not you. It's a biochemical imbalance, and there are people like us to help you. We just need to know you need help. So thank you, Cassidy, for coming on my show. Thank you for sharing your very personal story. Thank you for the strength that you have to come out and use your story to help other people. And
it's
I hope
my
you'll
pleasure.
Be back sometime.
Thank you so much. I'd love to be back.
Thank you, and have a good night. Have a good turkey day.
Thank you. You as well, Eva. And thank you to all your listeners.
Good night.
Good night.